Josephus' proposal to surrender, however, was rejected by his fellow Jews, and all agreed that they would commit suicide by killing each other. They drew lots in order to decide who would die first, and Josephus ended up being one of the last two survivors. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 86, Enter Vespasian and Exit Josephus. I'm Mayor Soloveitchik. Of all the figures in the Bible, it is perhaps Joseph who seems most naturally gifted. He is clearly blessed at a young age with political skill, a natural grace, and an eerie ability to foretell the future. It is with this in mind that we may compare and contrast him to a very different Joseph, one much more controversial, though with an enduring impact on Jewish history, Yosef ben Matityahu, otherwise known as Josephus. As we read the story of Josephus's switching sides from the rebels to the Romans, we are astonished at his natural abilities, his innate gift for charming people in positions of power, and we can also sense at times that he seems perhaps to be styling himself based on the story of his namesake. Yet we also know that Josephus' story is a very different one from that of the original Joseph. For while the son of Jacob's tale ends in restored relationship with his brothers, Josephus' life was marked by the exact opposite. We bear all this in mind as we study the story of a man who serves as a central source for so much of the larger tale this series seeks to tell. Following the original victory over Cestius Gallus, the Jewish rebels gathered atop the Temple Mount and appointed a priest, Hanan ben Hanan, and Yosef ben Gurion as leaders and sent military generals to oversee the rebellion throughout the land. One of these generals was a young priest named Yosef, or Josephus, who was given authority over the Galilee and part of the Golan. Upon arriving in the north, Josephus immediately engaged in a rivalry with another fierce rebel whom we shall meet later, Yohanan of Gush Chalav. Meanwhile, the Emperor Nero appointed a general of his own, Vespasian, whose relatively undistinguished family but hardened military background meant that he could perhaps achieve victory in Judea without endangering Nero himself by emerging as a plausible candidate for emperor, or so Nero thought. Vespasian arrived in the Galilee with 60,000 men in the spring of 67 CE and ultimately besieged the fortress town of Yotvata, what is called Yotvat today. Josephus' description of the battle is enormously dramatic, and the work of Guy McLean Rogers, to which I'm profoundly indebted in this talk, is particularly interesting because he places that original account within the context of military history. Here is Rogers' succinct summation of what the Romans created around Yotvata and the battle that followed. Quote, Roman legions had vast experience building such earthworks. Every soldier knew exactly what to do. Timber from surrounding mountain forests and masses of stones were immediately gathered up. Screening hurdles were put up over palisades by Vespasian soldiers to protect the Romans while they built up the earthworks. The effort involved in constructing such protective screens and the earthworks was enormous and should not be overlooked. Roman legionary soldiers were trained to fight, but also to dig and build. In addition to his weapons and armor, in his kit, every legionary carried a saw, a basket, a pick, and an axe. One of the distinctive characteristics of Rome's legionary infantrymen was that they were simultaneously warriors and combat engineers. From the ramparts of the city wall, the Jewish defenders, meanwhile, threw large boulders down onto the Roman screens. Vespasian then had his estimated 160 artillery machines moved into a circular formation, and he ordered the soldiers who manned them to shoot at the rebel soldiers who were defending the walls. All at once, the catapults shot arrows or bolts, and the stone throwers hurled stones weighing upwards of 75 pounds towards the Jews. Brands of fire and a great number of arrows also filled the air. The barrage not only made the wall uninhabitable by its defenders, but it also cleared the spaces directly behind the wall. A mass of Arab archers, javelin throwers, and slingers discharged their weapons at the same time as the artillery barrage. Although they were unable to defend the ramparts under this deadly bombardment, assault teams of Jews nevertheless rushed out from Yotvata, pulled off the protective screens that the Romans had put up, and attacked the exposed workmen. When the workmen retreated, the Jews destroyed the earthworks and set the palisades and hurdles on fire. These lightning raids were stopped only after Vespasian ordered that all the hurdles were to be united and defended by soldiers who had closed up together. No longer harassed by raiding parties, the Romans soon raised their embankment wall almost up to the level of the town's battlements. In response, Josephus ordered his masons to increase the height of the town's defensive wall. To protect those involved in this task, palisades were attached to the wall with oxen hides fixed over them. These snared the stones hurled at the Jews from the Romans and deflected other projectiles. End quote. Already, we get a sense of Josephus's natural brilliance. This is a young temple priest with no real military experience who is holding an enormous Roman force at bay. He is, of course, the one telling us the story, but if even half of what he describes is accurate, it is enormously impressive. Vespasian then thought that he could besiege the city, and in response, Josephus used theatrics, hanging wet laundry in the Roman line of sight so that the enemy assumed that water was plentiful within the town. The Roman general then decided to assault the wall directly with a battering ram, and Josephus describes the incredible heroism of the Jewish fighters, including one named Eliezer, who lifted and dropped an enormous stone onto the ram while taking several arrows in his flesh. Eventually, however, the wall was breached, and Roman and Jew fought in hand-to-hand combat, with the Romans scaling the wall and ramparts. MacLean Rogers describes the quick and brutal thinking of the Jewish commander in response to the Romans scaling the walls and walking across planks toward the rebels. Quote, at this critical juncture, Josephus resorted to chemical and herbal warfare. He ordered boiling oil to be poured down upon the shields of the advancing Romans. The oil instantly penetrated beneath the armor of the Roman soldiers and began to boil them alive like cooked lobsters. Writhing in agony, the Romans fell or leapt down from the gangplanks or tried to make their way back down the ladders they had climbed up. The way back, however, was blocked by their fellow soldiers who were formed into the second assault wave. The soldiers in the second wave struggled forward to get past the retreating comrades, only to encounter a second problem. After the first Roman assault team was driven back by the scalding hot oil, the Jews poured boiling fenugreek upon the planks themselves. Fenugreek was a liquid extract from the local plant Fenum graecum. The distilled juice of the plant was as slick as Pennzoil spilled upon a new blacktop on a hot day. After the boards were covered in the fenugreek, it was impossible for anyone to stand up on them, let alone to advance or retreat. Those who tried simply fell down and were crushed underfoot or fell off the gangplanks altogether, end quote. Vespasian, in other words, was not succeeding, and then he experienced an advantageous event. An escapee from the town advised the Roman general to attack before dawn when the sentries were sleepy. The Romans succeeded on day 47 of the siege in capturing the town. Josephus took refuge with other rebels in a cavern, and when surrounded by the Romans, he decided to surrender, based on his claimed understanding of the imminent Roman victory. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, to Josephus' own description of his decision. Quote, he called to mind the dreams which he had dreamt in the nighttime, whereby God had signified to him beforehand both the future calamities of the Jews and the events that concerned the Roman emperors. Now Josephus was able to give shrewd conjectures about the interpretation of such dreams as have been ambiguously delivered by God. End quote. Here it seems perhaps as if he is deliberately comparing himself to the original Joseph, who was known for his own prescient dreams and for his interpretations of those of others. Josephus then claims that he prayed to God, quote, since it pleaseth thee who hast created the Jewish nation to depress the same, and since all their good fortune has gone over to the Romans, and since thou hast made choice of this soul of mine to foretell what is to come to pass hereafter, I willingly give them my hands and am content to live. And I protest openly that I do not go over to the Romans as a deserter of the Jews, but as a minister from thee. End quote. Josephus' proposal to surrender, however, was rejected by his fellow Jews, and all agreed that they would commit suicide by killing each other. They drew lots in order to decide who would die first, and Josephus ended up being one of the last two survivors. After convincing the other surviving rebel to surrender with him, Josephus was hauled before Vespasian. Josephus asked not to be sent to the Emperor Nero in Rome, which would mean a certain death, but instead to stay and join Vespasian, who he claimed would one day be emperor. Josephus said, thou, O Vespasian, art Caesar and emperor, thou and this thy son. Bind me now still faster and keep me for thyself. Josephus then claimed that he had others confirm for Vespasian that he had predicted the fall of Iotvata in 47 days. Here too one senses a perhaps deliberate comparison by Josephus to the original Joseph, whose gift for prediction becomes known in Pharaoh's court. Josephus' story will also parallel in certain ways that of Yochanan ben Zakkai, who, as we shall see, also escaped the besieged city and predicted Vespasian's rise to the throne. But of course, Josephus is also different from this great biblical and this great Mishnaic figure. The original Joseph worked to unite his family. Ben Zakkai focused on ensuring the future of Judaism. MacLean Rogers judgment of Josephus bears quoting. "Generals worthy of their positions," he writes, "do not urge their soldiers to sacrifice their lives and then refuse to sacrifice their own. Sacrifice on behalf of others is the essence of leadership." Minimally, therefore, Josephus was not an effective or admirable general and probably never should have put himself in the position of leading others, particularly in a war that he had expressed ambivalence about previously. However he justified it, in the end, Josephus wanted to live. No leader worthy of the name can be in a position where his or her life is more valuable than those that follow him or her. End quote. At the same time, Rogers notes, another common criticism of Josephus, that he was a coward, is, in his view, incorrect. For, as he notes, quote, "Josephus had fought during the siege, risking his life against Rome's legionaries, auxiliary soldiers who hated Jews, and allies who hated them even more. He also had no guarantee that once he was brought to Vespasian after surrendering, he would not be executed or worse. Josephus may have been a traitor to the anti-Roman cause and his followers in Yotvata. A coward he was not," end quote. All this is well taken, and as historians note, something else arose from Josephus' later works. By documenting all that occurred in the Jewish war, the survivor of Yotvata produced an indelible record that testified to the deep bond between the Jewish people and the Holy Land, and to Jerusalem in particular. We know from Josephus how fiercely Jews were willing to fight Rome for one fortified town in the Galilee. And we know from Josephus how dearly Jews fought for Jerusalem. Josephus' writings, whatever else they are, serve as a testament to a love of a people for a land and a bond that cannot be broken. When we read the writings of that Joseph who surrendered in 67 CE, we can therefore ponder that bond between the Jewish people and the Holy Land and understand why the promise of the original biblical Joseph to his brothers, "Pakod yifkod Elokim etchem," God will surely remember you, you will return to the Holy Land, would be stunningly fulfilled in our own time. This is Meir Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Wishing you a joyous Hanukkah. Signing off.